Hello, I'm Fred Stella, president of the Interfaith Dialogue Association. Welcome to another edition of Common Threads. The book May Cause Love, An Unexpected Journey of Enlightenment After Abortion by Cassie Underwood tells a powerful story that is so often silenced, self-discovery and empowerment after abortion. Nearly one in three women will experience abortion in her lifetime. Moving beyond the polarized tales of regret or relief, Cassie Underwood offers refreshingly candid perspectives and shares a relatable, non-judgmental, reassuring, and compelling story of one woman's journey confronting a common life experience as a catalyst to learn about the surprising forces that limit women's lives and the emotional healing techniques that could have prevented her accidental pregnancy in the first place. A little bit about our author today. Cassie Underwood's work has been published in the New York Times, The Atlantic, The Rumpus, and Refinery 29. She holds an MFA in literary nonfiction from Columbia University, where she taught on the faculty of the undergraduate writing program. In 2012, she won Exhale's Pro Voice Storyteller Award in recognition of her personal essays on abortion. In 2013, she traveled across the United States sharing her journey after abortion in an effort to bring peace to the abortion war. Described by audiences as part storyteller, part public speaker, and part performance artist, Cassie gives talks on the spirituality of abortion, addiction recovery, personal transformation, and social justice. She's addressed Christian churches and liberal arts colleges, shared a stage with stand-up comedians Amy Schumer and Sarah Silverman, and appeared as a guest on MSNBC and HuffPost Live. And she lives with her husband in Cambridge, Massachusetts. As a matter of fact, I believe we are speaking to Cassie at Harvard today. Cassie, welcome to Common Threads.
Thanks so much for having me.
And my first question is, after reading this book, May Cause Love, I'm just amazed. I don't know if I've ever read such a personal account of someone's life. And you really get into such intimate details. And I'm curious, what happens after a book is published like this? Do you, your interactions with the people you know, or even meeting new people, how has it been for you? And any regrets?
No regrets now, but right after it was published, I was thinking, oh my God, because my 90-year-old grandfather picked up the book and was reading it in a bookstore in Kentucky. And I was thinking, oh my gosh, like, what is he going to find in there? And he started emailing me how much he loved it. So that was surprising and amazing. And then all my parents' friends were reading it, and my in-laws were reading it. And they all gave me really positive feedback, and they've shared some stories back with me, and they've become big promoters of the book, which shocked me because it is, like you said, so incredibly personal. And I talk about so many things that we don't normally talk about.
And all of these people in your circle, your friends, family, has that engendered any political arguments?
It hasn't. And I think that what happens when we tell a really personal story is that we can find ourselves in the story. And it kind of takes away the political defenses. And I grew up in a family where people were protesting abortion clinics. And I had some family members get arrested for blocking the doors of an abortion clinic. And those same family members asked my mom how the book was doing. So, you know, it's amazing what happens when we tell the truth. People can resonate with that.
So I think that it is only appropriate that we start off by talking about your circumstances. You had an abortion at the age of 19, and therein lies the entire tale. And we'll start off by saying that you probably agree with me that, well, first of all, you do not believe in the criminalization of terminating a pregnancy, correct? That's pretty obvious in the book.
Yeah, I don't believe that women should go to jail for having an abortion.
Or physicians, am I correct?
Yes, that's correct. But other than that, I really don't think that talking about it from the perspective of opinion is going to get us where we want to go as a nation, as human beings who want to relate and connect with one another.
No, I agree. But when you wrote this book, you wrote it in really a different political climate, even though you wrote it, what, maybe a year ago or so?
Oh, well, I started writing it 13 years ago when I was 19. So I've been writing it through a lot of different political climates.
Okay, sure.
Yeah.
Sure. But from that time until the book is released, I should say, things are different. And the political culture on both sides has changed drastically. So it's very interesting that your book comes out now, and I hope that it does lend to the healing that I know that you want. So anyway, let's tell a bit of the story. You're 19 years old, and you find yourself in a very challenging predicament.
Yes. So I was raised in a socially conservative family. I always thought that abortion was wrong for me. And I went to college in Vermont, which was as far away from Kentucky as I could get. Nothing wrong. I love Kentucky. I just wanted to get far, far away from home. And I ended up dating this like hot bad boy. And within a couple of weeks of meeting him, I found out I was pregnant. And I had been a virgin throughout high school. And when I got to the Northeast, everyone was like, what are you doing? Like, what is wrong with you? Like, why are you so trying to be so pure? And so I started to question that. And within a very short time, I was pregnant. And it was my worst nightmare. And I think it was my parents' worst nightmare. As soon as I found out, I'd gone to the doctor for a foot injury, but I also thought I was pregnant. So I accidentally asked the doctor for a pregnancy test. And when he told me I was pregnant, I was just like, oh, my God, like I'd rather die. And I didn't want to have to make the decision. I didn't want to have to go through this. And yet the first person that I went to talk to was the only woman I knew in the whole world who'd had an abortion.
And what was her advice?
Her advice was, she put me on the phone with Planned Parenthood, and she pointed out what was going on in my life, which was that I was drinking a lot. She was also my boss, which getting pregnant and going to see the boss that I've already angered because I kept showing up to work drunk. She told me, you know, you're drinking too much. You're dating this guy that you just met. He's got a pretty thick legal record. And it's, you know, you live in a dorm room. So she was trying to point out the obvious to me. And I still wanted to see myself as this person who would never have an abortion. So I kept arguing against her, even though I wanted her to keep talking me into having an abortion. And then I went home and I ended up scheduling my appointment. And I was really terrified of feeling of losing my mind afterward. I was afraid that people that I would just like go crazy in the silence of it, because I didn't know anybody who'd had an abortion except for her, and yet one in three women have an abortion in their lifetime. So I knew something was going on socially, and I knew that I didn't like to keep things secret. So I was just terrified of living in that kind of world. And so after my abortion, I did not keep it a secret.
And the actual procedure itself, how did you get through that? Was it what you were expecting? Was it worse? Was it easy?
Well, I had been told. So here's the thing that happens when a woman gets pregnant and is trying to decide whether she wants to have an abortion, is that she goes to look for information, and none of the information is entirely true. Some of it seems like misleading or sanitized or blatantly false. And so I felt like all the information I was finding about what this experience would be like was I could sense that it was politicized. I could sense that people who were that whoever was writing this information had a motive. So I had no clue what to truly expect because I could tell that there wasn't real information available to me. And when I actually was when going through the procedure, which is a very short 5 minutes procedure, it was literally the worst pain physical pain I'd ever felt in my life. And I don't want to scare people because for some people it's not that at all. But for me, it was awful. And I think just what got me through that was probably disassociating from it and trying to think about my future and what I wanted for my life. And I didn't want, you know, I wore like a black turtleneck sweater to the appointment. I was like, I'm a serious person and I'm academic. And, you know, I wore like jeans and a turtleneck sweater because I wanted the people at the clinic to think I was smart. And I just kept thinking about my future and being an adult and trying to go get on with my life.
Women who have shared having this procedure with me have never talked about pain. Do you know why this was painful? Do you know, is anything about your body that made this happen?
I don't know. I have no clue. Have you ever asked someone if they experienced pain during it?
Yes.
Huh.
Yes.
I don't know why it was painful for me. I've heard from a lot of women that it was painful.
But you say you've heard from other people or you indicated that this isn't always the case.
It's not always the case, but I've also heard from a lot of other women that it's painful, that it was painful for them.
Okay.
So I think that there's a lot of, I have no idea. Maybe the women that you talked to for whom it wasn't painful for them.
Right, exactly. I'm just curious what causes pain for one person but not another. But I'm sure that there are many procedures that men and women go through where you talk to one person and you get a completely different story in terms of how painful or how not painful it was. And so after the abortion, you really went through the ringer mentally and emotionally. Talk a little bit about that.
Yeah, well, at first I thought that it wasn't a big deal. It was so less of a big deal than everybody made it out to be on the political stage. So initially, I was talking to everybody about it as though I were talking about, you know, my weekend. And then as time went on, my feelings started to change, and I had gotten sober, and I had graduated from college, and my life had become what I imagined that it would need to be in order to have a child. And at the same time, my ex, with whom I had become pregnant, he had his life had been a real struggle. He'd been in jail a lot, and he ended up meeting a woman, and they got pregnant, and they had, and I found out about that on the third anniversary of my abortion. And they ended up naming the baby the same name that I had picked out in the brief stretch that we talked about having the baby. And that was like, it just was like a stake through my heart. And especially because they weren't able to raise the child. His parents ended up raising the baby. And so I went through a lot of questioning during that time. And because I didn't feel like I could talk about my abortion with anybody. I just couldn't talk about the fact that I was sad. And that was a real pain, and I was trying to hide it even from myself. I didn't want to know that I was sad, and I think that grief in this culture, in this country, is more taboo, or at least as taboo as abortion. We don't talk about grief. There's a lot of ungrieved grief. People don't want to deal with their own grief, so when somebody else is grieving in the presence, they shut it down. And they do that by saying, well, it wasn't the right time for you to have a baby. Or, you know, if somebody loses a spouse, they say, you look so good, like 6 months later. And so, I was living in a context, and that context was an ungrieved culture. It's also a political context. And it was a really politically, it seemed to me to be as intense as it is right now. There were politicians saying that women should have to have fetal burials and have death certificates. And it was so I was angry at that, but at the same time, I was feeling all this sadness about my own experience.
If you're just joining us, you're listening to Common Threads on WGVU. I'm Fred Stella, and with me today is Cassie Underwood. We're talking about her book, May Cause Love, An Unexpected Journey of Enlightenment After Abortion. I think I understand this pretty well, because on one side you have the people who would criminalize abortion, essentially saying, you did something really wrong. The only way you're going to ever feel good is to repent. And then on the other side, the pro-choice side, the Planned Parenthood side, it's almost like any sign of weakness, any sign of pain, emotional pain, is a mark for the other side. So we can't show that. Am I on the right track here?
Yes. I mean, I would say that that's on the right track. What's cool about Planned Parenthood is they actually took away their pro-choice label. So they don't identify as pro-choice anymore. And that happened in 2013. And yeah, it does. There is this sense, and I was doing it too, that I didn't want anyone to think that I regretted my abortion, because around this topic, people tend to swing from one side or the other. So if you don't feel like amazing afterward, then you must be in absolute hell and feel all this regret and pain. And you wish that you didn't do it. That's like the story that happens. And I didn't want to try to fit into either one of those sides, because both were true at the exact same time.
And so you went on a spiritual quest.
Yeah, and that took me a little bit of time to work up to. I had to get into quite a bit of pain and feeling that I was going to betray feminism if I talked about my abortion in an honest way. If I said that I was thinking about what would have happened if I'd had the baby. And it was still with me 6 years later. And what happened was I was trying to run from the pain. I tried every way to run from the pain. It was like, I'll find a new boyfriend. I'll move to New York City. I'll go to graduate school. And I ended up in graduate school taking a class in Buddhism. And I went to see the teacher one day, and she said, what are you writing about in your writing program? I was there for an MFA in nonfiction writing. And I said, abortion. And I wasn't. I don't even know why I said that. And she said, have you heard of Mizuko Kuyo? And I said, no, definitely not. And she said, Mizuko means water baby. And it's a water baby ritual for people who have experienced abortion. And from that moment, I just decided immediately that I was going to find every ritual and ceremony there was to do. And I didn't even know they existed, but I insisted that they exist because I needed to do them.
You felt you needed to partake in these rituals even though you weren't members of these spiritual communities.
Yes, that's true. I wasn't a member of any spiritual community, but the spiritual, except a 12-step community, because I had gotten sober. And I just felt that the spiritual quest was where I was headed, and that was where I was finding solace and finding more questions and some answers. And so going into Catholicism and Buddhism and Judaism and asking these questions about what it means to be human, that seemed like the right thing for me to do.
And before you took part in these rituals, did you do investigation into the tradition? So when you were consulting with a rabbi, did you know a little bit about Judaism? Did you know about Roman Catholicism? Or did you just dive right in and find out the tradition through the ritual?
A little bit of both. I grew up my next door neighbors were Jewish, and when I was growing up, so I would go to the synagogue a lot with them. And so I had some exposure to Judaism. And I've just been around a lot of different religions throughout the years. And I'd been really interested in Buddhism. I'd taken the course in Buddhism. I'd been a little bit involved with a Buddhist community called Shambhala in Austin, Texas. And I did some research as I was doing it, but I was honestly in just so much pain and fear about what I was going to discover about myself, about abortion, about my life, about my abortion, that I was just trying to get to the rituals, just trying to get through them and experience whatever I needed to experience. I just needed to heal.
And your first opportunity, as you just mentioned, was with Buddhism. Tell us a little bit about that that endeavor.
Yeah, so the Buddhist ritual is really amazing. It was created by women in Buddhism in the 17th century. And the ritual, like I said, is called Mizuko Kuyo. And the word Mizuko means water baby, and Kuyo means respect. And so the word water, water can change forms. It can be solid, it can be liquid, it can evaporate. And it created this this moral, it just created a space where where you didn't have to be one thing or the other. It could be fluid. And the experience of having an abortion could have a fluid meaning. What was lost could be fluid. And so it was really special and amazing to have a space where it was really outside of the political context. And in Japan, where this ritual started, there's not a big abortion conflict like there is in the United States. Birth control was legalized way after the birth control pill was legalized way after abortion was legalized there. And it's just it provided this space outside of the war, the abortion war, where I could go into this Buddhist church and meet with this priest, and he did a ritual with me, and it was just amazing.
So the Buddhist ritual, as we say, was your first ritual. And reading in the book, it really seems like it, as you say, it was quite powerful and that there was a healing, yet you still maintained your goal to go through other rituals. And I'm just curious, from that point, were you doing this as sort of a reporter, a journalist, or did you still feel that more things had to happen within you?
Well, definitely more things had to happen with me or I would have just stopped because it was terrifying to go into these places. The next place I went was a Roman Catholic retreat. And what was coming up for me was that I had anger toward the anti-abortion movement. And I didn't realize how much anger until I landed in this space, and my anger increased, and I was like enraged while I was in this healing retreat. Everyone else was having this amazing healing experience, and I was like stewing in my seat, and I felt totally suppressed about like how I was feeling. I didn't feel like I could say that I was mad and that I didn't like how they were talking to us. And a priest at one point walked me out on the lawn and pulled a plastic fetus out of his pocket and told me that life began at conception and invited me to confession.
Before you move on, yeah. That particular episode in the Catholic retreat is something I wanted to spend a little bit more time on, and we are down to the wire right now. So I'd like to invite you back next week, Cassie, and we can continue this conversation.
I'd love to come back.
But before we do that, if people are interested, aside from getting your book, do you have a website? Do you have other resources that you encourage people to check out?
Yes, I'm holding a seminar called Revolution After Abortion, one in May and one in June. So if any women who have experienced abortion would like to come to the seminar, they can register through my website, CassieUnderwood.com. And it's CassieUnderwood.com.
Wonderful. Well, I appreciate you being here today and look forward to our conversation next week.
Me too. Thank you.
This is Common Threads on WGVU. I'm Fred Stella, and Cassie Underwood has been our guest today. She's the author of May Cause Love, An Unexpected Journey of Enlightenment After Abortion. Please join us next week right here on WGVU-FM.